Whether you operate one forklift or thousands, one location or hundreds, the new My Toyota customer portal can help you optimize your operation and material handling equipment. This one-stop, free-to-use platform is designed to help you take control of your information and make smarter decisions, all at the touch of a button. Register and access your data today at my.toyotaforklift.com. That's my.toyotaforklift.com. Hey, it's Kevin Lawton with the New Warehouse Podcast, bringing you a new episode today. And on today's episode, I am going to be joined by Reed Jackson. He is the Vice President of Business Development over at GS1 US. And GS1 is focused on standards and standardization. And if you guys know me, you know I love standardization in the warehouse. But they're focused on some more foundational standardization, I would say. And Reed's going to talk to us a little bit about that, kind of the roots of GS1, maybe some of what they're more commonly known for historically. But we're going to talk too about how they're getting involved in kind of new technologies, automation specifically, and how they're creating some standards around that as well to help that industry kind of continue to evolve, but evolve in a very smart way. So Reed, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm great, Kevin. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate the time today.
Definitely happy to get you on here. GS1, you guys are like my neighbor here in New Jersey, so always appreciate getting some neighbors here on the podcast. But yeah, I mean, it's great to connect, great to learn about this. I mean, I think it's very important to have standards in whatever industry you're in. So definitely interested to dive into this topic with you. So why don't you kind of, for people maybe that are not familiar with GS1, but I'm sure they've seen things that GS1 does and put out there, just not aware, give us kind of the foundational knowledge, kind of set the stage for us. What is GS1 do, and what are some of the most common things you're known for?
Yeah, absolutely. We are an identification standards organization for products, companies, and things. I mean, it's really those three things. We identify companies, we identify the things that they manufacture, and we identify the locations that they're leveraged in and used about. We're most commonly known for the UPC barcode. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so like, oh yeah, that's right. You're the barcode people. And we love hearing that, but we're so much more than the barcode people. And actually we're a technology agnostic organization. So, but let me take you back just a little history as to how it all got started, because it was 50 years ago and a little over actually now. But the grocery industry got together and was like, we need to fix this problem. And the problem was checkout. It was lines at checkout. The queues were too long. Then it was accuracy at the checkout. And for those that were alive back then, you know, you'd go to the checkout and it would have a printed, you know, price on it. And people would take prices off and move prices, or it didn't have a price. And so, you know, there's very, very fine margins in grocery. I mean, we're looking at like pennies, half a penny type thing. It's all volume type stuff. So for them, it was extremely important. So they got together as a conglomerate, and they brought everyone together and like, we need the brands to have some type of identifier on them to speed up the checkout and to increase the accuracy. And hence came the UPC barcode. Right. So there were a lot of folks involved, ourselves included, and we were kind of the offshoot of this to become a not-for-profit, net neutral standards organization. So we work for industry and we're there to help and maintain the use of the standard. And so we bring industries together, solve the problems with them. It's their voice. We just execute, you know, on that. But there was a lot involved. I mean, really, barcodes weren't leveraged before that. And if you think about it, packaging was done, and I believe I have one on here, you didn't have this UPC barcode, right? And so there's a lot of technology behind this. If you think about, you know, we do self-checkout all the time now, and people just take it for granted. You take it, it goes beep, and boom, it moves on. but it's used in other places and other areas. Now, a misknown thing, though, is not all barcodes are created equal. There are lots of barcodes that look like this,
yeah,
but it's not a universal product code or a global trade item number, right? A G10, a global trade item number. It's simply a barcode with a proprietary number in it, which works fine in a closed loop system. It right. really works well. So you have a lot of warehouse, like, you know, today's market, we have a ton of drop shippers, D2C type of things. And so you'll have these warehouses that are just distribution centers and they have hundreds of clients within them. But to maintain the organization in their warehouse, they want a barcoding system. So they're using a proprietary barcoding system. And so people will say, hey, I need a barcode. My retailer's requiring a barcode. That is a big difference in a statement versus my retailer's requiring a UPC or a global trade item number. There's a big difference because once it's issued by GS1, and I'll talk about GS1 as an organization in a second, but once it's issued by GS1, it's issued once and that's it. And it's never issued again. So it's
unique.
This unique number was applied to ABC company for XYZ product, and that is perpetual, and it kind of stays out there in the marketplace. So back to GS1. So GS1 is a global federated organization. And as you introduced us, I work for GS1 US. There's also GS1 Canada. There's GS1 France. There's GS1 Germany. The headquarters of GS1 Global is in Brussels. And, you know, we're federated. And the reason we're federated is because there's different tax laws and there's different regulations in each country and those types of things. So in the United States, we have over about 330,000 members of GS1 US. And these are, you know, companies that have tons of different products, you know, everything from the Johnson & Johnson's to the Procter & Gamble's to the, you know, folks that came out of COVID and started, you know, manufacturing soaps and lotions and disinfectants and other types of materials and products, and they start selling them. You don't need to have a UPC to sell online, but a lot of retailers require it because it makes the whole checkout and inventory process streamlined for them. So they've created efficiencies and investments.
Yeah, very interesting. And I think it's so ubiquitous, I think, in our world, right? Like, as you said, I mean, you know, you held something up, there's a barcode on it, right? And I think there's a couple of things right in front of me too that I can hold up that have barcodes too, right? And I mean, I think it's, as consumers, right, I mean, we don't really necessarily think about those things. As you said, you go to self-checkout and it just happens, right?
Right.
Essentially, right? But I mean, there is so much going into that, and that simple barcode, you know, in appearance is really actually driving a lot of that product movement and just the overall supply chain behind that, right? I mean, as we look at, you know, from point to point, you know, so many people are leveraging that barcode to be able to, you know, tell where is that inventory, what is that inventory, you know, how do we move it from here to there. And, you know, I think somebody on the podcast once said it's kind of like the passport to the supply chain in a sense, right? And I think it's such a great analogy because you really need to, in order to ensure that you're moving that thing properly through all the different channels, have that kind of unique identification, which you guys are able to provide. I'm curious for kind of the opposite side of things. I mean, if a company or a product doesn't have this, you know, unique UPC or G10 barcode, whatever the case is, I mean, what could happen to their product? Like, what could go bad?
Well, it really depends on the environments and the use cases, right? There's benefits to it, but we also are a voluntary standard, right? There's no one out there with this rule that says you have to use this, but there are regulations that happen and they recommend the use of this. So like the FDA has some recommendations for the Food Safety and Modernization Act. And so when we talk about like just groceries, lettuce, for example, everyone knows we've had tons of lettuce recall and such. Yeah. But if you have this information, improperly implemented, it can cost millions of dollars, let alone illness and, God forbid, you know, severe sickness and you know, other problems. But when you have it implemented correctly, think about it from not only the consumer side, we're going to get the product off the shelf and not have a harmful environment for the consumer. But think about it on the brand and manufacturing side. You don't have to take all of your product off the shelf. You take only the product that's been infected or has the situation that needs to be addressed. We see that a lot. You know, a lot of folks in the U.S. are familiar with the Subway, you know, sandwich stores, not the Subway you get on the train and go, but where you kind of go, like your Blimpies and your Jimmy John's and your, you know, there's Jersey Mike's for us here. Although I live in North Carolina, and there's more Jersey Mike's in North Carolina than there are in New Jersey. But Subway is a company that, you know, when they started out, they would take product, lettuce, tomato, meats, breads, everything. They would take it into their inventory from tons of different suppliers, but they would inventory it all the same. Whether it was lettuce from Kevin or lettuce from Reed or lettuce from the Smith farm, when it came in, it was lettuce. And then if there was ever a problem, E. coli or bacteria or something else that happened, because, you know, things happen, they would have to recall everything. Now they've moved over and they've implemented GS1 standards. And so now it's like, hey, you know, Reed's farm had an E. coli breakout. Kevin's farm is fine. The Smith's farm is fine. Only recall any place that received Reed's lettuce. And that's where this, the standards really come in to help. The other thing I want to build on too is talk about UPPs and global trade items, but they also build into purchase order agreements and manifestos of what's on a shipping container. So we have serialized shipping container codes that are built off of the other standards that we have. So it's really a system of standards that are being leveraged.
Yeah, it's very interesting. And I think there's so many different parts and aspects, as you're touching on here, that are just stemming from, you know, just some stripes, right? Essentially on a product. And, you know, it carries so much weight and it allows for so many things to happen, not only from, you know, a safety perspective, as you mentioned, a health perspective, but also from efficiency perspective too, from a supply chain business perspective too. So many things that is kind of powering, which I think is really a great thing and a smart thing. So we've kind of understand here now, you know, where the roots of GS1 kind of came from and where they're born and tied to, and these UPCs, GTINs, barcodes, and standardization overall. But as we look at, you know, the supply chain space right now, and, you know, especially like the warehouse space, you know, which we focus on this podcast, but you know, we see so much in the way of technology coming to the forefront. I mean, I think, you know, it's been certainly expanding, exploding, maybe in some senses, you could even say, over the last few years. And I think even more so, more rapidly accelerated with the pandemic in terms of, you know, not only systems, AI, robotics, automation, but, you know, it's just wild to see kind of this growth of all these things. And from GS1's perspective, you guys are also kind of getting involved in this rapid technology expansion and bringing some standardization to that. So I guess tell us a little bit about on that side of things for GS1. How are you getting involved in, I guess, let's say automation, for example, in the space and bringing some of your standardization to that?
Yeah, happy to do that. I'm glad that you're bringing that up. And it's funny because when I joined GS1 a little over 5 years ago, I was brought into the innovation team. And I was coming from a 25-year experience in IT, mostly selling high-end cutting-edge systems. I was selling IP telephony when Lucent was still around, and I was working for Cisco Systems and was working in unsupervised machine learning systems before most folks were understanding what machine learning was, and was very fortunate to be on the cutting edge of technologies before they became mainstream. And so when I came here, my boss at the time is Melanie Noose, and she wanted to look at the intersection of technology and the use of GS1 standards. Where could they be complementary? Where did they butt heads? Where were they competitive? And it was really about two-way education on both sides. And so we were looking at blockchain. We were looking at computer vision. We were looking at robotics. There's a lot going on there. And we think about the barcode. The barcode is technology. And that's a 50-year-old technology that's still being used. And I remember January of 2020. So we had already moved here. An associate and myself were in San Francisco at an AI/computer vision conference.
Okay.
And we were always looking at these things. We were with a lot of companies that were doing self-checkout. Right. I mean, because that was when the grab and go from Amazon had come out and 7-Eleven was implementing it in some stores. And so we were always looking at this. And there was a conversation about one of the presenters, and I was sitting in the front row, and he knew who I was. And he was talking about computer vision. And he's like, computer vision will completely replace the barcode. And he looked right at me and he goes, your technology is dead. And that's it. And I just sat and we talked. Afterwards, and I'm like, I am a huge fan of computer vision. We need to leverage more of it. You are absolutely right, except for one thing. Computer vision cannot tell you the expiration date of any product by looking at it, unless it's stamped on the product.
Yeah.
And he's like, huh, computer vision cannot tell you the batch number of something by just looking at it. He's like, well, we would just have an identifier. I'm like, you mean a barcode? The barcode could be an identifier.
Yeah.
And a QR code is an identifier, and a QR code can hold more information. So constantly, and this is what I liked most over was one, we help industry. Two, we're technology agnostic. And three, we had close to 50 years of experience. So I was just learning so much about different, you know, areas. And supply chains are different, but they're also the same. Right. There's nuance and things, but we can benefit from the systems. Right. And they always say a rising tide lifts all boats, but not all marinas are the same. Mm. You need ports for big container ships and you need marinas for smaller ships. So you're going to do similar things, but you're going to do them in different ways. And that's kind of like supply chain. Warehouse is not the same as retail stores. Mm. Online has a different experience. But how do you deal with fraud,
right?
If you don't have a license plate that's registered to a third party that is doing some of these checks. So there were lots of things that came about. So when people say you're the barcode company, it's like, well, we really appreciate that. It's kind of like saying Kleenex when you really just want a tissue, or Xerox when you really just want a copy. We appreciate that, but QR codes are identifiers. We call them data carriers. RFID tags are data carriers. Sound is a data carrier. It's a wave of data that's going across the air. And so we're constantly looking at all these different things and where can we play, because a barcode isn't the be-all, end-all. RFID is not the be-all, end-all. Computer vision is not the be-all, end-all. They all have places where they really shine and places where they don't shine as much. So we've been heavily involved with RFID. We leverage external resources and communities and groups. We're heavily involved with MIT and the Auburn RFID lab. We're constantly looking at these technologies and how they're being implemented and used. And then we're trying to really get with industry, because you'll have the medical industry wants to use RFID one way and they'll say, hey, we want to use 128 bits. And then you'll have the grocery industry say, we want to use RFID, but we want to use it this way, and we want to use XY bits or number of bits. Mm-hmm. And they're all right for different reasons, and they're all wrong for some reasons. And it's, how do we bring the communities together to rise above and kind of see, hey, you're selling a product in a grocery store, a drugstore, and it's being used in a hospital. Mm. Those are three very different supply chains with very singular swim lanes, but it's the same product. We need information about that product. You know, it wasn't that long ago where you would receive, you know, Tylenol or Advil or any of these over-the-counter type of medications, and it would come with a packet. I mean, a big packet that would be folded up and you'd use it. And then it moved to a small packet. And now it's being moved to a digital record on a website, leveraging smartphones and QR codes and pulling that out. So how can we embed the global trade item number into that, or, you know, or its identification, and maintain it consistently throughout supply chains and reduce fraud and protect consumers and inform consumers, but also protect the brand and protect the retailers and increase efficiencies for the retailers and the brands and so on, so that everybody can have, you know, a rising tide lifted.
Interesting. Yeah. I think it's very interesting. And I love the example of, you know, the computer vision, like the conference you were mentioning, and, you know, Hal said that the barcode is going to go away, but it's very true. It's like, how are you going to identify the stuff? Like, you still need to read something in some way to be able to get
that. You'd be informed. Information.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. So, I mean, if we look at, you know, things we were talking before we started recording here, you know, we go into like a ProMat last year and you just like, you know, swarms essentially surrounded by robots, automation, whether it's, you know, moving pallets, picking items, unloading trucks, all these different things, right? From GS1's perspective, say if we take maybe the example of AMRs that are, you know, moving pallets from point A to point B,
yeah.
Where does kind of that standardization come into play in that type of technology and those standards?
We'll be back after a quick break.
You hear a lot about supply chains these days, because if the past couple years have taught us anything, it's that an efficient, well-managed supply chain is absolutely critical to keeping businesses successful and consumers happy. I'm Will Haywood, and I host a podcast called All Business, No Boundaries, where we talk about supply chains, how they work, what happens when they don't, and the innovations that are redefining what's possible in the world of logistics. Join me for insightful interviews with thought leaders and industry experts. We discuss how optimizing supply chains can break down the barriers that are holding businesses back. That's All Business, No Boundaries by DHL Supply Chain. Listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
So it's an excellent question, and ProMat is an amazing conference. I would, you know, encourage folks, if you ever get the opportunity, to check it out, because it will blow your mind as to what's really out. And when people talk about robotics, we often really think about the physical robotics, the arms, right? The little trolleys that move, you know, shelving around, and all different things. But there's also software robotics, right? It's the automation of things that are happening. It's building scripts and skills and what I would say is systems. And it's funny because we were just having this conversation yesterday. Lots of people build plans on how to be successful.
Yeah.
Few people recognize the systems that they leverage and the systems that they build. Amazon's probably one of the best at it. You know, Jeff Bezos, you know, just a brilliant person, like him, hate him, whatever, but still just the ideas of things that he's come up with, and they leverage systems. And so do a lot of other people. Target has done a tremendous job with this. Home Depot, Lowe's, Johnson & Johnson, you know, the list goes on, and even names we don't know about. But I want to use a very simple example. Robots are computers, right? I mean, it's really what it is. It has a processing engine, but it needs to reflect on, 9 times out of 10, some type of database or data stream, right? It doesn't have to be a flat file database. It could be a live stream, but it still has to reflect off of something. Just like we learn, we keep things in memory and we reflect back to that memory. That's how computers work, but it needs contextual understanding. And you and I actually talked about this earlier. I'd like to use a very simple example. You know, like, I can give you a number, but what does that number really mean without contextual understanding? And that's what a standard is, right? The example I used with you was the number 02032024. Mm-hmm. Now, most people are like, oh, okay, 02, February, 03, third day of the year 2024. But if you're in England listening to this, that is actually the 2nd of March, in 2024, right? It's the exact same number. And so a computer doesn't know this unless you give it contextual understanding. And that's what our standard does with identification. We created this system and we have a prefix and a number that follows, and the prefix identifies the company, the number that follows identifies the product. It's kept in a registry. It's then used. You can use a prefix to identify a location. Here's the company, the location assigned to it. Hospitals use this a lot for, here's the building, here is the closet, here is the room, here is the dispensary, all those types of things, and keep track of where their products are and moving through. And that can be programmed in. And that's what provides scale. So when I first came on and I was meeting with a lot of startup companies and even well-established companies and meeting with their R&D labs and where they think things were going, blockchain. Everyone thought blockchain, you know, was going to save the world, and it has done tremendous things. Don't get me wrong, but it's still a technology. Why create a new identification system when you can leverage it? Because the reality in the world is not everybody has the latest and greatest.
Yeah.
Think about it. How many bodegas in New York City use a scanner to scan products out at checkout? They're still typing in the numbers.
Yeah.
Same product. You know, it's a can of Coke, a bottle of Pepsi, you know, something like that. It's the same product that's being used at McDonald's, at the grocery store, sold at the hospital. It's the same product, but they don't have that technology. And then you have like a Walmart or an Amazon who's leveraging RFID, they're leveraging computer vision, but the brands still need to be able to play in all these different environments. And there's an adoption. So you're always going to need, you know, the different aspects, and how can the standard of information be leveraged? And I think about what we're doing right now, and what enticed me about coming on board with GS1 5 years ago was, one, it helps industry. Two, I get exposed to other things I wasn't exposed to. But three, I grew up in IT. I got my degree in environmental science, did that for about 2 years, and then quickly moved over to network printing, which then moved me into networking. And that was back when I had a comb, hair dryer, and had a whole thing in the morning where I would comb my hair. So, but that was before the internet was mainstream. And we were dealing with networks such as Banyan Vines, Apple Talk, Token Ring. And you understood what a wide area network was versus a local area network. And companies were still leveraging a lot of mainframes. And retailers still leverage a lot of mainframes today. They've got so much information in there and so much invested, they can't just throw them out. So how do they tack things on? Still using a lot of shared web services too, but you know, COBOL isn't dead. But anyway, what I recognized real fast about GS1 standards was the relationship that I had in growing up. And when Cisco Systems pushed through the internet protocol and routers, and you still did wide area networks and local area networks, but now everyone could talk to each other because it wasn't an Apple network and it wasn't a Novell network and it wasn't an IBM network. It was just a network. It was the internet. And so that's really what I see with GS1. It's not your supply chain or their supply chain. And I think it's irony in the name, supply chain, right? It's like this link, but it's not linear. It's not even just circular. It's a web. It's a web. I mean, if you look around, what did we go through with COVID? And what are we, you know, on the tip of right now with, you know, the conflicts around the globe that are disrupting shipping lanes?
Yeah.
We're going to be running it. So people are scrambling. Where can I get my supplies from? And where can I get this from? And how can I fill this gap? It's a web. So think about if you were to start today and one of your clients spoke English and then that worked out great, but all of a sudden tomorrow they were speaking Japanese.
Yeah.
And then it was Mandarin. And then it was Farsi, right? And then it was German. You would have to learn all these languages every single day.
Yeah.
And so that's why we say we're the, you know, the language of doing business. That's what we are globally. If you get a universal product code or a global trade item number, it will work with any barcoding system. It will be accepted at any major retailer throughout the globe. It's just, it is the standard that you build on. And if you think about what we're doing today, I remember the days where you used to update your PC with 16 CDs and even floppies before that. And now we just do it. It just downloads. I remember when video first came out and it was, oh my gosh, nobody had the bandwidth to do it. Now we take it for granted.
Yeah.
Email, text messaging, you know, phone calls, all these things. We just take them for granted. And it's built off of years and years and years of technology. And I really see that the same way with GS1 standards and supply chains. Again, it's voluntary. You can create your own proprietary network if you wanted to. And in supply chains, they do that. They do that for good reason. Well, guess what? In technology, they do that for good reasons too.
Yeah,
security reasons and so forth. But if you want to share, you want to be, as you stated, ubiquitous. And I still remember when I first heard that word, it was at a Rutgers presentation. The head of Palo Alto Research Center, PARC, which was a Xerox thing back in the 60s and 70s. And for just a little education, they're the ones that created email, Ethernet, the mouse, the touchscreen, Windows, Apple, all came from PARC. They all came from PARC. But anyway, this was 1995. And this guy came and gave a presentation and he talked about ubiquitous computing, meaning you'd walk into a room and the lights would turn on and they would dim to what you liked and the heat would turn on and it would be at the temperature you like and it would know who you are and all this stuff. And I remembered looking at the people next to me, what does ubiquitous mean? Like it was, but now it's an everyday term, just like supply chain is an everyday term for everyone.
Yeah.
But 20 years ago, it wasn't. And if you think about it today, I walk into my house, I have a Nest. I didn't get one when they first came out. I waited a really long time. And then my energy provider did a 50% off and that was enticing. I got it. And sure enough, I walk in, the heat turns on.
Yeah.
And I use smart switches and smart plugs. And especially around the holidays, it helps me with turning on and off the lights all the time. But this is all built off of standards. And when IoT came out, it wasn't that long ago. There was an IoT system at Lowe's. There was an IoT system at Home Depot. Apple had an IoT system. Google had an IoT system. And they finally all got together and said, what are we doing?
Yeah.
We would all grow more if we had a standard. And they created that. So
absolutely.
Yeah, a lot of commonality.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's such great examples too that you give there because I mean, it is such a foundational component when you look at technologies and when there's been standardization in play, right? I mean, it allows for just that growth and acceleration of the technology to continue with, you know, like the last example you just gave, which ultimately allows for better consumer adoption and, you know, the ability to get not only, you know, have to be like, oh, I'm just a Google guy only, right? It's like, well, you know, well, Google has something that works for me, but then maybe there's also something that has to do with Alexa that works for me too, from an Amazon perspective.
Right.
So you're able to kind of bring those together. And I think as we look at the technology landscape and all of the new technologies that are coming out in supply chain, I mean, I think that's very key as well, because you see, you know, if we look at a warehouse, for example, right, we have multiple different processes within that operation. And, you know, we're not necessarily going to have a company, and there's certainly companies that I think are trying now to have some type of automation or robotic solution for every process within the warehouse. But that doesn't necessarily mean, you know, that's a one size fits all situation. So you want to be able to have those communicate in different ways and have that underlying system, like you mentioned, be able to really drive all that and connect. Like, you don't want to end up going with one solution and then, well, you know, that closes out my options on like 8 other solutions, right, that I could put into place. So I think it's really interesting, you know, the underlying foundational component of it is so kind of consistent maybe in history to be able to create that standardization and how that really can impact an industry as a whole in a positive way and have everybody grow together, which I think is a great thing. So Very interesting stuff talking to you here, Reed, and learning more about GS1 and just how kind of deep, I guess, those foundational roots go and how much it kind of drives so many of the things that we're doing, not only in supply chain, but just every day and in our consumer lives too, that we don't even know is kind of surrounding us. So very much appreciate you coming on the show and talking to us and giving us all these great insights. If people are interested in learning more about diving deeper into some of what GS1 does, what is the best way to do that?
Yeah, I mean, the best way is just go to our website. We're at gs1us.org, and there's lots of resources there, tons of different things. We even have a call center. People call in all the time asking questions, but we have a Connect, which is our user conference that happens every year in June. Find out more information about that on our website as well. But it's where all brands and vendors come together and talk about the successes and issues still in the environments and how we can, you know, all benefit from standards and the use of and where we need improvements or expansions or to deal with new concepts that have come around. We're definitely pushing the adoption, but education of understanding what we call 2D barcodes, but using the Kleenex, Xerox, and other examples, it's really a QR code. There's lots of different types of QR codes, but they've been adopted and implemented and used. And it's like, okay, so how can we get retailers to just have, instead of a UPC and a QR code, maybe just a QR code? We see that transition happening over the next 5-10 years. So we're talking about things like that as well at those conferences.
All right, great. And we'll definitely be looking out for those things. And we'll put all that information at thenewwarehouse.com as well, so people can easily find it. So, Reed, I want to thank you once again for coming on the show today. Thank you for listening to this episode. If you want more content from The New Warehouse, check out our new video series called All Hands on LinkedIn. Just search for The New Warehouse on LinkedIn and follow along.